So hi and welcome to the Movies Love podcast. This is Andrew, as always, and I'm gonna start this off with something kind of weird, or at least different. I guess I do kind of always try to talk a little bit and say something nice and work in something very, very intriguing. At least I hope it's intriguing most times into what the show is gonna be as we move forward. But this is not the typical episode. I participated in an experiment, which I shouldn't say participate, I attempted an experiment, and there are a lot of you out there who participated, and that experiment is this podcast. And I have to say, like, not to be the one to pat my own back or toot my own horn, but I'm kind of happy with what came out of it. At this point, I have recorded and released 19 episodes, 19 conversations with myself and other film bloggers out there in the world, some of whom I knew before, some who I hadn't talked to, some that, you know, just like a lot of us, we might only know each other through the compulsive every once in a while tweet to one another, where we're just kind of having fun and laughing at a stupid film joke that we all have together. But at the same time, it kind of, like, as I said this before, but it kind of feels amazing that I was able to get this done, and with a sense of completion, a sense of happiness, because I remember when I started my first podcast, the Unnamed Movie Podcast, I was always very timid about letting people into that show. Like, I have my two regular co-hosts on that show, and if you're not listening to that one, you should give it a try. You might enjoy it. It's more film buffoonery and lots of jokingness and awesomeness between me and my friends. And I was always very timid to let people in because I had this fear, this deep lying fear, that eventually people would discover me as being this not too knowledgeable cinema person, or this person who, using the word cinema, would be kind of somewhere in between ignorant and satirical, because I'd be like, oh, he says the word, but he doesn't quite know exactly what it means, or at the very least, it doesn't mean the same to me as it does to the next person. And it's been a long journey these last few years, doing that podcast, now starting this one, running the website, doing all of my writings, because when I think about this, it's been at least five years of me running my website, gmanreviews.com, and writing, and not just writing for myself, but writing for other websites, newspapers, covering festivals, doing all sorts of things that, honestly, I'm kind of, now looking back at it, even as I'm saying right now, it's kind of crazy that I got all of these things done. And while I'm sure there's going to be someone out there who will tell me, sure, you did it, but you didn't do it at that level or that great, I'm kind of happy. I'm sure, as always, I'm going to keep pushing to try and do more and do some, as I said, some more great things, I hope. And who knows where 2014 is going to take me. But anyways, I guess I should actually get into talking about this show, because as I mentioned earlier, I've so far gotten 19 people to participate in this experiment called the Movies You Love podcast. And first of all, before I go any further, I just want to take a moment to say thank you. Thank you to those 19 people who took an hour or so at any given time throughout the last year and was like, sure, Andrew, I'll sit down and I'll talk with you and we'll have this conversation. And I mean, I said it in an email to them privately. I'm happy to divulge this part myself, that even if you got the vibe, or someone told you, or you just knew outright that the film that we ended up discussing in the episode that you are on, I didn't quite love, I need you guys to know that somehow attaching the conversations we had to the films has added to my memory of that movie forever. It will forever be there. I mean, guys, thank you. And thank you also to all of you guys out there listening, because while I don't really have all of the stats in front of me at every given moment, I don't really look down those things too hard, I have a feeling like there is a bit of an audience out there. And if you're listening, if you've tweeted, if you've liked, if you've shared, if you've told someone about the show, if you've subscribed, rated, or reviewed us on iTunes, if you've just simply smiled, going, yeah, Andrew and all of these conversations, they kind of add something to your day. Thank you. Because honestly, that's the true end goal I'm looking for. But this episode itself, it's the year-end wrap-up episode, where what I did was I asked all of my guests I invited all of my guests to come on and answer a very specific question for me to help discuss this last year in film. Because while this podcast generally doesn't run into the foray of contemporary cinema, I do find it interesting that for most of the stories that we would end up going into and most of the conversations, they'd end up starting with a story of childhood, a story of a time when someone introduced you to a film. And I'd only imagine that if we listening now, I don't know if anyone listening now this qualifies for, if we listening now were to be the ages we were when we were talking about these stories, most times we would be having this experience in the theater with a contemporary current film. And with that in mind, I wanted to ask people not what their favorite film of the year was, or what the best film of the year was, or the film that everyone should go out and watch kind of discussion. But I wanted to ask something very closely tied into what this podcast does, which is discussing the film that they hope or expect would be cited by people in the future who today would be falling in love with film that was released this year. And it brought up a lot of great films from this year gone by, and I'm gonna do my best to answer this question myself in due time. But what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna hand you over to all of my previous guests and just take in what they have to say and enjoy. I'll be back in a bit.
Hi, I'm Andrew Parker, and I'm the Film and Performing Arts Editor for Georgia. I think that if I were to pick something that was going to be a film that I want people to learn and take a lot from in the future, it would probably be a movie that's actually somewhat about the future and about how we interact with everything around us. And that would probably be Spike Jonze's Her, which I think is probably the deepest, most easily analyzed mainstream studio film this year, which means I think it's a perfect way for people to sort of get into cinema and sort of look back on this year and what cinema was capable of and what sort of dialogues we could have from it. But also because I think going forward with film more and more becoming intertwined with the internet and everything that goes along with sort of an online discussion about film, I can't think of a better example than Her. Only because Her is actually about how we relate to the machines around us and how the machines around us impart themselves onto us and vice versa. It's about, in a way, it's very cinematic because it's about one medium informing another medium. It's how we perceive love and how an outside sort of construct that doesn't even have a pulse can perceive love. And I think within that there are a lot of discussions that could be had. And especially on a screenwriting level, I don't think I've seen a script for film that has been as tight as Her in years. I think there's something in every line of dialogue in the film and in every choice that the actors end up making with that dialogue that can be analyzed to death, and it can be analyzed in so many different ways. You can see it as a cautionary tale. You can see it as a straight up romance. You can see it as just a regular science fiction film. There are so many different ways that you could read Her, and I don't think necessarily if you actually think out your arguments well enough, you would be wrong. I think Her is probably the strongest film of the year, and I also think that it's the film that I would be most happy to talk about with people in the future. Sounds so weird saying the future, talking about a movie about the future. But I think it is something that people will be able to latch onto, and especially for younger people that are just sort of starting to get into film, I think it's a good example of a movie that people can use as sort of an in to realize that, you know, filmmaking can tell a grand, very humanizing story, but can also deal with really, really abstract and tough to deal with themes that the audience still has to puzzle out on their own, no matter how straightforward the movie is on surface level. And for me, that's why I think Hers is probably the best movie of the year and something that I think people will come back to as sort of an influence in their future.
Hey Andrew, it's Tom Cliff from Melbourne, Australia here. I am the co-founder of MovieMezzanine.com. I write for Movie Decks, Reviews by Tom, a whole bunch of other places. It's been a while. I think we last spoke in March on the podcast when I discussed with you the movie that made me fall in love with movies, which was Christopher Nolan's Memento. And I'm calling in now to let you know what I think might be the movie released in 2013 that someone in the future will cite as the reason that they fell in love with movies. Now, this is, I think, a really difficult question. It's not necessarily just a matter of talking about my favorite film of the year, which, incidentally, is Asghar Farhadi's The Past. That's a great film, but I don't know that quite fits the criteria for your question. To me, when I think about Memento, which is the movie that made me fall in love with movies, the reason that film had such an influence on me when I was 14 and saw it for the first time was that when I watched it, it was doing something that I'd never seen before. It was a film unlike anything I'd ever seen. It had this way of telling its story that was totally unique to me. And so, with that in mind, the film from 2013 that I think is totally unique and totally mind-blowing and might be the film that, for someone, really changes the way that they think about movies is Josh Oppenheimer's The Act of Killing. Now, this is not an easy film to watch. Certainly the preferred director's cut of this documentary is 3 hours long, which is, that's the version I saw. I saw that in the middle of the Melbourne International Film Festival this year, and it's a film that when you leave the theatre wondering if you'll ever feel emotions like happiness or joy ever again, because it is that bleak and disturbing. It's a movie that defeats you, that you will think about, I found, for days afterwards. It's a movie that makes you want to go home and be hugged by a loved one, because it's that disturbing. What it's about, if people haven't seen it, is it's about Josh Oppenheimer, who's a Western filmmaker, and he went to Indonesia and spoke with the men who, during, I believe, the 1960s, were responsible for murdering thousands of communists and communist sympathizers after the sort of overthrow of the government in Indonesia. And these men are well into their 60s and 70s now, and what Oppenheimer does is challenge these you know, mass murderers who are generally considered national heroes in Indonesia. He challenges them to recreate some of their killings, often using film genre tropes. So, for example, recreate a murder in the style of a 30s gangster movie, or recreate it in the style of a musical. The film is very strange, it's very surreal, and it's deeply disturbing. Watching these men talk and laugh about these horrific crimes that they committed, for which they've gone totally unpunished, you know, it really gives you, it really is this disturbing examination of evil, whether evil is something that exists, whether a person is inherently evil, or whether it's defined by their actions, whether someone is redeemable. I mean, we see these men who, you know, if you were to come into the movie 15 minutes in, you would have no idea. They seem like just friendly old men who love their grandchildren, they're laughing and joking with each other. But the truth is that they've committed these horrific crimes, and they're, you know, by any kind of sort of religious definition, would probably burn in hell if you believe in that sort of thing. So these guys are awful, and watching this film, being exposed to that, and being forced to consider, you know, notions of evil, but also notions of storytelling, how we construct, you know, ideas of film. You know, they use these film tropes to reconstruct these killings, and it I don't know, for me, I'd never seen anything like this movie, and as much as I probably never want to watch it again because I was so disturbed by it, I think that that's probably the movie from 2013 that maybe stuck with me the longest, and certainly is a totally unique viewing experience. It's not for everyone. Some people will hate it, and completely understandable why that is, but I do think that it's a film that really has the potential to get into someone's brain, to get under their skin, and I think really will change for some people how they think about film as a medium. And so for that reason, I think it's my answer to your question as the film that I think will maybe not even cite as the reason they fell in love with movies, because it's a very difficult movie to love, but certainly a movie that maybe took their appreciation of film to that next level. All right, anyway, yeah, you have a good holiday, and I'm sure I'll hopefully get to talk to you in the new year.
Hey, Andrew, Matthew Price here from Mammo, the podcast about movies and popular culture. So the film that I hope and expect will be the one for 2013, the one that inspires people, the one that makes them happy, the one that creates in them maybe a love of movies. Geez, I don't know. For me, that movie is perversely, although it wouldn't necessarily be my best film of the year, because I don't order my top 10 or my, I don't even have 10 necessarily in terms of my best movies of the year. But the one that I hope inspires people, I have to say, is The Lone Ranger. I hope that The Lone Ranger inspires more filmmakers and future film lovers to realize that big movies have to exist. That big, messy, crazy, off on a tangent movies that are about the joy of cinema have to continue to exist, and that movies don't have to be bound by the rules of what makes them good, or that they don't have to pay attention to hitting a certain running time or having a certain narrow shape and narrow definition. I didn't have a better time in terms of summer blockbusters than I had with The Lone Ranger. I might not have had a better time in the theater all year, except that I saw The Wizard of Oz in 3D, and hells yeah. But in terms of new movies, boy, The Lone Ranger was something else. And when they cue up that theme and they earn that moment where they give you the William Tell Overture, that's as exciting as anything I've seen. And I genuinely hope that people can cast off some of the nonsense that walked around that movie on its initial release and actually just appreciate how handmade and great it is, especially for something that is so corporate and so potentially awful. So, that's pretty much what I had to say. Good luck with this project. I think this is a great idea.
Hello, Andrew, and everybody listening at Movies You Love. This is Ryan McNeil in Toronto, Canada, from thematinee.ca and the Matinee Cast. I was on an early episode of Movies You Love to talk about Field of Dreams, and today I'm here to push us into 2014 by answering one specific question from the G-Man, which I suppose is only fair play considering how many questions I make my podcasting guests answer. And that question is, what film released in 2013 do I hope or expect the people in the future would cite as the film that helped them fall in love with movies? And I need to give you kudos right away, because this is a really, really difficult question. It doesn't ask what the best film of the year is or what my favorite film of the year is, but it asks something that's genuinely a big part of movie going, be it early on or whenever somebody comes to film. So I kind of had to think about how I wanted to approach this, and I wanted to approach this from the place of innocence and happiness, and that stems back to perhaps what was my biggest surprise of 2013, and it's one of the most recent films I've seen. It is Frozen, directed by Chris Buck and Jennifer Lee. And obviously, first and foremost, you'll have the possibility that children go to see this film, and that children fall in love with this film and the song, the amazing, amazing songs contained within it, and the beautiful, beautiful artwork that it contains as well. Part of me hopes that some teenagers come to this, because I think to myself, when I was 13 and 14 and 15, I was lucky enough to watch the kind of the renaissance of Walt Disney Animation Studios when they were putting out films like Beauty and the Beast and The Lion King and Aladdin, and I was able to go to them as a teenager, and specifically an art student who, you know, also a teenager going to an art school, and I was able to see things in the way it was composed, in the way that it was illustrated, and appreciate it so much more than just being a plucky cartoon. So I'm sort of hoping that another generation of animators will come to Frozen at the age of 13, 14, 15 and see it for how clever it is, how really, really difficult it is with all the snow and ice that you know, Disney had to go out and write software to render this stuff properly. And most of all, I hope that people who happen to come to Frozen, whenever it is that they do come to Frozen, like me, that they are really, really surprised by it, and that that can possibly lead to falling for this film a little bit harder. If anybody who out there who's like me might have seen it as the way it was marketed, they might have seen it as a movie about a plucky little snowman and his human buddies, and that is the way it's being sold. You look at the posters and the commercials, and the character of Olaf is really, really marketable, right? You can see children wanting to get their little Olaf toys and their Happy Meals and their little stuffed animals and that kind of thing. But the truth of the matter is that it's two sisters that really steal this show, who this whole story is about, the characters of Anna and Elsa, and that's kind of another element where I hope this film inspires future filmgoers. I hope that I hope that little girls see these very, very empowering characters, and that they take a cue that princesses don't need to sit around and wait for their prince to come. And I hope that little boys see these characters and gain a respect for women that maybe boys are still really needing to be taught, and that is a gigantic shame. And all of this kind of stuff is what I took away from Frozen, and I saw it just about a week ago, and it's really, really stuck with me. So not necessarily the best film of 2013, and maybe not necessarily my favorite, but probably the one that's really going to stick with me the longest. So hopefully there are some other people out there like me, and they see this movie and they fall in love. I hope your listeners have nothing but the happiest and most prosperous 2014, and we'll see everybody next year. Thanks.
This is Andrew Johnson from Movie Mezzanine and Film Geek Radio, and the film from 2013 that I hope people in the future will cite as a film that helped them fall in love with movies is Edgar Wright's The World's End. Not only is this Edgar Wright's most mature film yet and a brilliant conclusion to his informal Cornetto trilogy, it's a perfect example of how movies can act as fun, escapist entertainment, dark character studies, and scathing social satire all at the same time. It's a movie that exposes the potential for self-destruction that resides inside all of us, while also inviting us to imagine a better world in which such destruction doesn't have to be a rebellious grasp for freedom. Oh, and it's also absolutely hilarious. I've seen The World's End twice now, and I'm amazed that a movie this ballsy managed to secure funding and receive a wide mainstream release. If you haven't seen it, all you need to know is that it follows Gary King, a middle-aged alcoholic so lost in the past, he gets his friends back together to return to their hometown to complete the Golden Mile, which is a pub crawl with a dozen stops. Because this is an Edgar Wright film, though, the gang soon encounters some pretty crazy obstacles, but I won't spoil them for you here. Simon Pegg gives his most enthusiastic and layered performance yet as Gary King, who's the most flawed protagonist Wright and the gang have ever created. What's great about The World's End is that it encapsulates all the themes that have been present in Wright's previous films, most notably a distrust of social and political institutions, and a celebration of free will. It's a hilarious mainstream comedy that, like a lot of great art, contains some pretty radical subtext. So while you enjoy Gary Strong and shenanigans, you can also contemplate a world beyond capitalism itself, if you so choose. It made me laugh, it almost made me cry, and it continues to burrow deep into my brain and make me question a lot of my previously held assumptions. It's popcorn entertainment that's truly brave, and as a result, it's a movie I love.
Hi, this is Brian Collins from Horror Movie A Day and BadassDigest.com, and Andrew has asked me to join the End of Year Movies You Love podcast. Question is, what film released in 2013 do you hope or expect someone in the future would cite as the reason they fell in love with movies? 2013 has been a really great year for movies, and I'm sure that all my fellow participants are going to be overloading you with all great titles. I'm going to just stick to horror because that's my thing, and to me, no question, the movie that's going to make a lot of kids turn into horror fans is James Wan's The Conjuring. I think it was almost like a studio, you know, kind of job for him. It wasn't something that he developed, and but he put his own touch on it. And Warner took a chance. They liked what they saw. They put it out in the middle of the summer, which is traditionally, you know, superhero movies, action movies, you know, big, you know, Pixar, Disney type stuff. You don't see a lot of horror movies coming out in the middle of July, but, you know, they knew they had something, and they were right. I mean, the movie ended up grossing, I forget, it was somewhere around $140 million just here in the U.S., a lot more than a lot of its competition. And, you know, more importantly, it was an R-rated horror movie, and, you know, the thinking for the past decade or so is that, you know, if you want that kind of money, you got to be PG-13, and they just went out with an R, and... It's kind of funny because the MPAA, since they don't have precedent, you can't say, well, this movie was PG-13 and it did this, same as we're doing, why are you giving us an R? That, you know, that logic doesn't work with them. To them, the reason that the movie got an R rating is not because it was violent or gory or had nudity or swears. In fact, it has absolutely none of that stuff. It only got the R because it was so scary, which I checked and I could not find another example of them doing that. It was always something that they said, you know, it was scary, but it also had this bit of violence. It was scary, but, you know, somebody lays out an F-bomb, you know, nothing. There was barely even any, like, damn or hell type swears, you know, it was just that scary. Because it's an R rating, you know, maybe kids didn't get to see it, but, you know, their dads, their moms, they're going to buy it on Blu-ray, and it's going to be sitting there on the shelf, and they're going to hear from their cool friend that, you know, it's not super gory, or maybe they'll just read the little MPAA thing on the back and think they can get away with it, and it's going to warp their mind, and that's going to be the movie that turns them into a horror fan, you know, the same way that, like, our parents, you know, my parents' generation had The Exorcist, and my generation had, you know, Scream, or, I guess Halloween was a little before my time, but maybe one of the Halloween sequels, 5/13, you know, something like that. That's, The Conjuring is going to be their movie. And, you know, I mean, there was other horror movies this year that came out that I liked, like Mama and, you know, Stoker, I really loved. I don't see those. I don't see Mama being the sort of movie that kind of like, oh, this horror, this is what I gotta watch, you know, and Stoker, I just don't see you liking unless you're already into, you know, kind of more adult and horror-y type stuff. I don't see a 12-year-old watching Stoker and being kind of blown away. Maybe a really greatly intelligent 12-year-old, but, you know, Conjuring is so accessible, you know, and, you know, there's a lot of kids in it, it's all girls, I think it has that je ne sais quoi that, you know, an 8 or 9 year old will see it and just, like, have nightmares. But then once that subsides, they'll be like, I gotta see more movies like this. And that's what's gonna inspire them to seek out The Exorcist and Texas Chainsaw and The Thing and Dawn of the Dead, you know, or the originals, hopefully. And, you know, but then they'll subscribe to Fangoria and start reading the books. And then, you know, when they reach the bottom of the barrel, they'll start reading my stuff. Thanks Warner, and thanks James Wan. I mean, that's going to be the movie, you know, 10, 15 years from now. That's going to be the one that guys my age, girls, and girls, will be saying, will be scared the shit out of them when they were a little kid. Now, you know, ever since they loved horror. So that's it, Conjuring. And thank you, Andrew, for having me be a part of this. Appreciate it.
My name is Matt Brown. I'm one of the co-hosts of the Mammo Podcast. My website is tedric.com. And the movie from 2013 that is going to open someone's eyes to movie making in general, or make them fall in love with the movies, it's got to be Gravity, right? Like, there have been a lot of really good movies this year, and actually a lot of movies that have done some pretty amazing things with the form itself, like, you know, for example, Before Midnight and the entire Before trilogy, and even to a lesser extent, Jeff Nichols' film Mud. But Gravity is the one. I find that those movies that grab people by the proverbial testicles and show them what movies can be, and set them on a lifetime of being fascinated by movies, they tend to be the ones that are both storytelling achievements and technical achievements. Gravity is obviously a hugely effective emotional story, and an incredibly effective treatise on theme as well, but it's also this example of a really talented director, in this case it's Alfonso Cuarón, moving the needle in terms of what the medium can actually do. Or, I mean, in this case, it's not even like he's reinventing the wheel in Gravity, but he's using the very height of the tools as they're available right now in ways that we haven't seen done, you know, at this level of craft, at this level of polish, ever before. And again, to an enormous emotional and thematic impact as well. So that's the movie of all of the stuff out of 2013 that I would think, you know, 15 years from now, some young lady will be, you know, on her first day at film school, they'll ask her, you know, why are you here? And she'll say, well, you know, my dad took me to see Gravity when I was 4 or 5 years old, and it just blew my hair back. I don't know if you should take a 5-year-old to see Gravity, but you know what? Why not? It's not actually not that bad for you. And it's certainly a transportive experience. And that quality is always, as far as I'm concerned, that quality is always there, too. Maybe I'm biased because of my experience with Star Wars. But the kinds of movies that take you somewhere, that just lift you completely out of the theater and propel you somewhere that you've never imagined or have never been, which Gravity certainly implies, they're the ones that leave those lingering impacts, too.
My name is Mariah Gates, and I blog at cinemafanatic.com. And my answer to the query, what film released in 2013 do I hope or expect someone in the future to cite as the reason they fell in love with movies, is Frances Ha, because it is such a beautiful, simple, straightforward film that is raw and honest and elegantly made. And I hope it inspires women to create similar stories, to write screenplays, to direct, to create flawed, interesting, real characters like Frances. I think it pays tribute to the history of cinema and the French New Wave and the British New Wave and all these things, and yet it has this beautiful light touch to it that is, and hope, that is just really inspiring as a film, and I would hope people would see it in the future and be just as moved by it as I was when I saw it in the cinema and then when I rewatched it recently. It's just a really, really beautiful film and speaks to the importance of collaboration, because it's, you know, Noah Baumbach sort of tends to be a little bitter, and I think working with Greta Gerwig, he sort of created, he took his style up a notch, because the cynicism that he would normally have in his films that sometimes isolates and makes them inapproachable, it's not really there. There is a bits of it, but I think the melding of their two artistic sentiments created something really astounding, and I just hope people discover it again and again and realize that something this wonderful can really be made and be made simply and quickly and still be entirely brilliant.
I'm Amy Ratcliffe from Geek with Curves, and the film of 2013 that I hope and expect will help future generations fall in love with movies is Pacific Rim. Though it didn't blow away the box office domestically, sadly, and it should have, it's just a really spectacular movie. That's the perfect word for it. Just the visuals of giant mechs fighting giant monsters. I don't know what else you could ask for. It was amazing to watch and really just exciting. Besides the stunning images of those two fighting each other and going against each other, director and writer Guillermo del Toro and writer Travis Beecham did a great job at taking a look at the world and building it out, so you actually believed it was a place where kaiju were attacking regularly and the human race on the coast at least on the Pacific Rim, you know, they were struggling to survive and to defend themselves. And they just threw in a lot of small touches that really made you believe it. And it doesn't seem like that should be something I should have to comment on and praise. It's so few movies these days, it seems like, you know, they don't go deeper. And I believe this movie did. And as far as the characters, there were a handful of interesting ones. The main character, Raleigh, he was a little flat, but he was a hero you could get behind with tragic backstory and really kind of turned around and you wanted to root for him. But I really liked Mako. The actress did a wonderful job at portraying this initially kind of, you perceive her as this meek girl and eventually she turns it around. Or she doesn't turn it around, it was always there. She shows you what she's capable of, and she overcomes. Also a tragic backstory, there's a lot of that going around, apparently, to become a Jaeger pilot and to do what she believes will make her adopted father, Stacker Pentecost, proud. And watching her transformation, you know, was really rewarding. I hesitate to use the word strong female character because it's a phrase, because it's overused, but she was one of those. So when you combine all of those things together, it just made for a really memorable movie-going experience. And even if the dialogue, you know, ventured into corny territory from time to time, except for the line about canceling the apocalypse, because Idris Elba can sell anything, and even if a character or two, like, you know, wasn't developed, you know, to their full potential, Pacific Rim is just a shining example of drop-dead gorgeous visuals and production design. And more importantly for me, it's the sort of film that just elicits a visceral emotional reaction. And isn't that what seeing movies is about? I kind of think it is. I just remember walking out of the theater after seeing Pacific Rim and feeling so excited and happy and just on this fun movie high that I just wanted to run around and tell every stranger I saw that you need to stop what you're doing and go see this movie because it's going to make you feel happy and excited about life and just excited about this is what we can do with movies. It's kind of awesome. And it still makes me feel that way. I've seen it a handful of times now, and most recently I watched it on the plane on a long trip, and I was trying to, like, I wanted to tell the person next to me to just you have to watch this. I want everybody hooked on this movie. So even it was amazing, I love the story, but more than anything it made me feel so excited about the potential of what movies can do. And I think that future generations will latch onto it, and I really foresee it becoming like one of those cult classics as the years go on.
Hi, this is Courtney Small from CinemaAccess.com. You can also find me on Twitter @SmallMind. The film from 2013 that I hope people in the future will cite as one of the films that made them fall in love with cinema is Upstream Color. Though Shane Carruth's science fiction love story is not an easy film to decipher, the complexities of the film are actually part of its charm. The film not only respects the viewer, but challenges them to do most of the heavy lifting. Upstream Color constantly keeps both the viewer and its main character on their toes. Plus, what other love story in recent memory has featured both mind control and baby pigs? Babe Pig in the City? I think not. Carruth crafts a film in which you will always come away with something new with every subsequent viewing. I've watched the film 3 times now and I still can't get enough of it. Every time I find a new piece to the puzzle, another series of questions arise. The philosophical chicken and the egg style narrative structure, not to mention the extraordinary use of sound, makes Upstream Color a film that one does not forget. Very few science fiction films can achieve that delicate balance of feeling both epic in scope and yet intimate in overall execution the way that Upstream Color does. Look, 2013 was a great year for films in general, there's no denying that. But only a handful of films, like Upstream Color for example, will be analyzed, debated, and dissected for years to come. That is why I hope Upstream Color is a film that future generations will discover, love, and cherish.
This is Gwen Reyes with RealVixen.com. I think that there were so many great movies this year, and I think that 2013 is going to definitely go down as one of those years that changes the game of film altogether. But one of the films that I personally loved and think is going to really stay in people's consciousness and maybe open the eyes to a new generation of young film lovers is definitely Disney's Frozen, a film that kind of spins and changes the princess tale on its head in a way that we haven't seen in a long time. And it's stunning and beautiful and worth all the money that you could possibly spend on seeing it in any version that you can. And it's also got a sweet story about sisterhood and the importance of family and not judging people based on their flaws, but loving them for them instead. And the music's really wonderful, and I think that it's going to be one of those films that stays with people a lot longer and hopefully will open the eyes of future lovers of films like Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast and Sleeping Beauty, and it really fits perfectly into that canon. And so for 2013, I think the best film that's really going to make people love films again is Disney's Frozen.
Hello, I'm Christopher Runyon, writer and critic for MovieMezzanine.com and host of the CineFect podcast. The question, what film released in 2013 do you hope slash expect that people in the future would cite as the film that helped them fall in love with movies? And this is something I find interesting because you can never really know until like the future, and it's kind of fun to see how these things play out later. And I'd say that the safest bet for movies that came out this year that will probably inspire lots of people to help them fall in love with movies is Alfonso Cuarón's Gravity, which is just this insane visual, visceral experience. And I mentioned in the podcast that I co-hosted when we talked about The Shining, that The Shining sort of opened my eyes to how the visual language of movies can do so much more than what we take for granted. And Gravity is such a perfect example of that, of taking this very simple survival tale and just elevating it through this incredible style and mood and atmosphere and sense of just insane amounts of tension that you get thanks to Alfonso Cuarón's technical craft with Gravity. And everything from the performances to the flawless, seamless implementation of CG in that movie is breathtaking to behold. It's sadly not in my top 10, but it's definitely an honorable mention because, you know, so many great films this year. But it's definitely one that I could totally see becoming such an influential film over the course of cinema. But another movie that I want to mention, and Gravity may be the movie that I expect that people in the future would cite as a film to help them fall in love with movies, but there's one that I kind of hope will do that if we're going to be interpreting the question differently, and it's Hayao Miyazaki's The Wind Rises, which technically hasn't even come out yet, but it did get an Oscar qualifying run, and lots of critics are including it in their top tens and everything, so I guess that technically makes it something of a 2013 movie. But The Wind Rises is just this movie that is just about the art of creativity as well as the cost of it, and I've never seen a movie that really delved into that as wonderfully and scarily as that movie does. because it sees like all of the facets of being creative, whether it be just through that joy of bringing something you love to life by creating these beautiful airplanes, and then the absolute terror you get when you realize that art, in order to make art, you need money, and in order to make art in general, there's always institutions and systems you have to follow, and how sometimes those can bastardize your vision. And it's just this both harrowing and lovely film, and I feel like that's going to, even though it's not as popular as, say, Gravity, which was a big international success, Hayao Miyazaki's film is, like, probably the apotheosis of what it's like to be creative, and I feel like for people who do see that movie, it will inspire lots of creativity, not just in the world of film, but also in terms of, like, other art forms, including animation. So, yeah, this is a really good year for movies, and I hope that these great movies that came out this year inspire people in the future.
So, before I even answer the question myself, once again, hearing all of those voices, again, thank you. Thank you guys for sending me your clips. Thank you guys for taking the time, and all the best with you guys, because 2014 is going to be a great year, but 2013 doesn't mean 2013 was anything less for this podcast, for me, or whatever. But to get into my answer of this question, I have to start discussing my understanding of the question itself, and I left it open to all of my guests because I didn't want to box them in into their own answers, and I feel the same way for myself, where I take that question, and there are very many ways I can interpret it, because everyone's story is different as to how they fell in love with film and how they would expect someone else to fall in love with film like themselves. It could be the popular movie which just has something a tad bit interesting or a tad bit weird that kind of cues you into that there might be something behind all of this. It could just be that really strange, out of left field movie that your weird friend lent you that weekend, and you discovered something completely new was possible with this art form. And I'm thinking more and more about a film that didn't hit my top list of the year, which I've already posted over on gmanreviews.com, and wasn't mentioned in any of the previous clips, and it's Michael Bay's Pain and Gain, because while this movie is a questionable film when it comes to being in any sense perfect, it kind of lies in that one area of cinema which I find the most interesting, and it's the complete opposite of perfect. It is, oh look, I'm doing a dumb English definition, it is the world of imperfection. Our world of movies and stories try so hard to be the perfectest world that could be, because they are created by us, and when they don't come out that way, when they just seem a little off kilter, it kind of gives it a whole different light to view film from. And Pain and Gain is a movie that I've described to many as an almost amazing film, because whenever I watch that movie, I think I've seen it like 3 or 4 times this year already. It's a film where I see it and it feels so much that there's just one tiny moment missing to change this movie into complete cinematic perfection, because it just works. All of the comedy works, all of the action works, and more so the visuals. The people like to go to Michael Bay films because all he does is blow things up, but there's something visually appealing about how he put this movie together. The burnt out feeling that you get from the Miami setting, the crazed moments within the gyms as well as during interrogations, the failure of these guys as they are just the worst criminals in the world. And someone else I remember, I think it's Devin Faraci, described this movie as Michael Bay wanting to go out and make Fargo, but having no idea as to how to make Fargo the movie, and this is what he brought out. And I think that's kind of true and kind of brilliant all at the same time. And I'm so happy for it. I mean, this is one of those movies which I feel very hard to recommend to people because it just kind of has this weird, strange thing to it. But I can imagine someone getting almost tricked into watching this movie at the theater this year gone by because they saw The Rock and Mark Wahlberg and Michael Bay directed movie and walked out with a complete new view on what movies are to them and to an art. So yeah, that's more and more. I think that's my answer to the question that I've posed to all of my guests. You can tell me I'm right, you can tell me I'm wrong, you can tell me I'm gone out of my mind, but it's what came to my mind thinking about it. Anyways, I think there's no better way for me to just segue into an outro, but I want to once again say thank you, everyone, because this has been fantastic. Thank you for listening to this episode. This was an experiment doing the clip thing. I hope it turned out very well for you listening as much as it turned out well for me putting it together, because I actually like how it came together, sorry to say, or happy to say, I don't know. But yeah, as always, and I say this every time, you can go and rate and subscribe to the show over on iTunes or through Stitcher. And as always, you can read my writings over at gmanreviews.com and follow me on Twitter at gmanreviews. I'm always happy to see someone send me a tweet saying, hey, they like the show. Or if you don't, you can tell me you didn't like the show, because I'm happy for negative criticism, because it helps me tell how I should do things better. I should actually say that I have the next episode already in the bank, and that's going to be a very interesting one, but I'm not going to give any clues to that yet, because I think it's nice to leave things open like that. But yeah, anyways, once again, thanks so much for listening. Seriously, guys, thank you. Have a really great day, or night, or evening, or afternoon, depending on when you're listening to this. And yeah, I'm out.